Welcome back to Dating Games, the Modern Relationships Podcast. I'm your host, Bobby Temps, and our guest this week is a certified dating coach and writer based in LA, who's gained a reputation for helping people all over the world find love, and also hosts a brilliant podcast called Dates and Mates, which recently passed 350 episodes, which, you know, as a podcaster, I'm so impressed by that. Basically, she's one of the most expert experts out there. I've also just found out she hosts another podcast all about business, and it's sponsored by FreshBooks, which is the accountancy software I use. So there you go. Good taste in both dating advice and accountancy. There you are. So please welcome to the show the wonderful Damona Hoffman.
Thank you so much for having me, Bobby.
You're welcome. That is one of my messier intros.
I thought it was brilliant.
Thank you. I must say it is novel to be speaking to you as someone that listens to your podcast, and I've actually not seen any of the wonderful TV work that I know you do. And so it's one of those like weird things that I'm so used to being the other side of, where people don't recognize my face as much as they recognize my voice.
Right. And it's weird too. Sometimes, like, I was in a studio last week and somebody heard my voice and they were like, I know that voice. I also have a very loud voice. So I suppose I'm in the right line of work. But it's weird to me to think that people would know my voice and be able to tell from down the hall that it's me. It's crazy.
Yeah, well, that's it, because you don't know any better. Like, you don't think it's distinctive because it's just all you've got rattling around in your head.
True. And I come from a background in producing, so I know some people have trouble listening to their voice, but I really go into producer mode when I'm making content, whether it's Dates and Mates or I Make a Living, the FreshBooks podcast, or even the TV shows that I do. I'm the love expert on the Drew Barrymore show, and I've done a bunch of other TV shows. I literally look at all of it almost like a producer, like it's not even me. And I just step back, and it's always for me about what the audience needs to know and the content that I'm delivering. So I'm able to completely separate. Like, sometimes I'll listen to my podcast and I like forget that it's actually my voice. And then sometimes I'll do it. I'll listen to it. I was listening back to my Dates and Mates episode today, and I'll think the thing that I'm about to say in my head a moment earlier, and then I'll say it. And I'm like, oh, it makes sense that I would have said that.
Yes. I'm glad that's not just me. No, I have that all the time when I'm editing mine, where I think, oh God, I should really say this thing. I wish I had. And then I go ahead and say it. And I'm like, oh wow.
Right.
I've still got it.
Yeah. And you forget that you said it. And then you're like, oh wow, I'm better than I thought.
Yeah. Which honestly, I think that's the joy of it. If you can push past the self-consciousness of, you know, judging yourself and do I really sound like that? I think once you're past that, it's really cool to be like, oh, actually, I do make sense. And it kind of affirms my way of thinking. It's so weird that, like, hearing myself back say a thing is what it takes for me to realize that that's my opinion. I'm like, that is too many steps.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I hadn't thought of it that way. And, you know, sometimes I'll hear it and I'm like, I can't believe I said that. You know, like you said in the intro, I've been doing the show, I think I'm on like 360 something episodes now. So that's over 8 years. I have evolved and changed, and so much has happened even in the landscape of dating since the time I began the show. And sometimes I'll go back to those older episodes. Tinder had just begun. I like broke the news about Tinder on one of my first episodes, and I was like, there's this new dating app and it's taking the world by storm. And a lot of people don't know this. They seeded Tinder at different universities. And one of the universities was Brigham Young University. Most of the students there are Mormon. And I was like, what? This like hookup app is at this Mormon university? Like, it just did not compute for me. But they really adopted Tinder and were part of the reason that it got put on the map.
Wow, I didn't know that. But it's incredible, isn't it, when you look back, like we can have this pressure to be perfect, but we've just got to do our best at the time. You know, when I look back on my mental health show, when we covered elements of the pandemic early on, we knew nothing. You know, nobody did.
No, we didn't know what we didn't know. Even as I tracked the phases of dating throughout the pandemic, it's sort of remarkable to me to look back at where we were a year ago and what attitudes were around things like virtual dating and vaccine. Like, now everybody's asking me to talk about how the vaccine is impacting dating today. the concept of even having a vaccine really didn't come into play in the dating world until this fall. Like, it still seemed so far away. And now people are like using the vaccine badge as another accolade and reason for them to be, you know, more dateable.
Remind me, what app was it that's embraced you can put on your vaccine status?
Coffee Meets Bagel has added a vaccine badge where you can say that you are vaccinated. I actually work with OkCupid as their dating expert. They have added a question, do you intend to get the vaccine, which 70% of our users have said, yes, I do intend to get it. And when they do, those who've said so have more likes and more matches, which is amazing. But I think it's still short-term thinking to a long-term decision, like who you're going to invite into your life is more important than just their vaccine status. And I'm not exactly sure how the rollout is working in the UK, but here in the States, some people that really want it can't get it. Some people who would want it for, you know, it's been so politicized here, but who would want it from a values perspective can't get it because of their other medical conditions or something like that. So I'm careful about assigning meaning to things that don't necessarily mean what we're adding them up to say.
Yeah.
I think a lot of daters are really looking for filters, looking for shortcuts. Because look, I've been in this game for a minute, Bobby. I started writing dating profiles 15 years ago when I was like seven. No, I'm kidding. I wasn't seven, but I was fairly young. I was online dating and figured out the system, which we can talk about later. I can share a story on that. But I have seen the evolution in dating apps. And originally, it was really the place that people went when they were seeking a serious relationship because you had to pay. You had to pay to create your profile. You had to invest time. I literally had to go to a store to scan my photo because we didn't have smartphones to put your photo into the computer. It's like crazy when you think of it from that perspective. So in that way, Tinder has been one of the best and one of the worst things to happen for dating because it opened up the possibility of so many other people embracing online dating. But it also was free. So the barrier for entry was really low. And you could just pick a couple of pictures from your Facebook profile and suddenly you're on. So anybody could be there and everybody could be there and everybody is there, especially within the pandemic. So now we have this paradox of choice situation where there's so many options that people are really grappling with finding ways to filter and sort because you don't have the in-person chemistry element. And when you have so many choices and so many people matching and landing in your inbox, you can become overwhelmed if you don't have little, you know, boxes to check to signify that this person is worth your time investment and emotional investment.
Yes, absolutely. I want to come back to this. Let's hear your dating story first.
Sure. Well, as I said, I was a very early adopter of online dating, but I found that it was really this hidden pool of matches. I was working as a casting director at the time in Hollywood, and it was very hard to meet people authentically. I just couldn't tell if people wanted to know me or wanted to know my job. And I was like caught up with all of these, you know, actors and musicians and people that were really thrilling and exciting, but not necessarily right for me. So I came up with a dating plan for myself. I kid you not. I literally like wrote a dating plan, which I still do with my clients today, but I called it Operation Date Nice Guys, Operation DNG. And like my friends at work were like, how's Operation DNG going? And I'm like, well, I met this guy. And I was on this dating app and I got a message from this fella who seemed great on paper. And of course, I had all these rules. I was like, you know, you got to talk on the phone first. I had all these rules. I threw them all out the window as soon as I saw his profile. And I was like, when can we meet? And then I thought, oh, no, you got to be cool. So then I told him, you should call me before the date because I have to make sure you're not a psychopath or anything. Like, what would a psychopath sound like on the phone? I have no idea. But I was like, yeah, okay, you seem okay. And so we made a plan to meet. This was right around Independence Day, July 4th. And I wanted to meet as quickly as possible. But he was like, oh, how about we meet on Monday? Because, you know, 4th of July, I'm chock full of barbecues. he literally said chock full of barbecues in his email to me. So, you know, that's what we do here on 4th of July. Everybody like party hops and, you know, woohoo, celebrates America. And so I was like, oh, yeah, 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 that's cool. Like, I didn't have any plans that weekend, but I was like, yeah, okay, good. He has other things going on. So we ended up meeting. We totally hit it off. We kept dating. And then the next year, it was 4th of July again. And I'm sitting around like waiting for these invitations to come in. And we didn't have anything to do. So I was like, what happened to all your barbecue invitations from last year? And he was like, oh, I actually made that up. I just didn't want you to think I was a nerd. So he had lied to me. He lied to me. I thought I was dating a nice guy. Operation Date Nice Guys failed. Because he lied from the start, but it was a good little white lie. And we're still together now, 17 years later.
Well, there you go. So sometimes it can work out even if they lie from the start. I have to know, though, what did he think you would think he's a nerd about? What was he doing instead?
He had no plans, which is consistent. He is kind of a nerd. He's an introvert, too. In case you can't tell, I'm quite high on the extrovert scale. So I think he was afraid that I was going to feel like, oh, he didn't have anything going on. But actually, the funny thing is, that's something I really appreciate about him. And a lot of people who met him early on, a lot of my friends were like, oh, I expected you to be with someone different. But I had tried dating all of the really, you know, out there, gregarious, outgoing guys. And look, somebody has to be listening. We can't both be talking all the time. But I found, I think people judge introverts incorrectly just because someone, he doesn't need to speak just to speak. But if you slow down and take the time to engage with him, he has so much to say. He just is a lot more of a slow burn and you have to sort of earn information from him. So that's my pitch for introverts, introvert dating. They make great partners.
I love that pitch. I'm going to give you some points right there. That's yeah, I agree with that. And I think the way you've described it, it very much highlights how I'm very extroverted as well. And we're kind of speedy. You know, we want to zip around and get to chat with everyone. And actually, that can leave me coming home feeling quite emotionally overwhelmed and sort of, I guess the word is baffled. And so actually having someone around that has a bit of a slower pace in terms of social interactions can actually help really ground me again. Because I think as much as I love being an extrovert, if I committed to it to the level that I think I could, I would never sleep because I'd just be too hyper from the social interaction all the time.
That's the big difference I have found with introverts versus extroverts is that social interaction piece and how it affects you. And it took me a while to really understand this. Like I knew that he was, quote, shy, but I didn't really understand the introvert extrovert dynamic until there's a book called Quiet that he literally forced me to read. It was like signed reading. And he's like, here, this will explain how I am and why I'm the way I am. And it's written by this former lawyer who is an introvert and talks about the power of introverts and being able to really see sort of the holes in other people's thinking and to piece it all together in a really thoughtful way. But in the book, she says, basically, the easiest way to tell if you're an introvert or an extrovert is if you go to a party and you come home absolutely drained, you're an introvert. If you come home hyped up, you're probably an extrovert. And that really happens in our dynamic. Like we'll go out to a party and I'll come home and I'll be like, this is, and then so-and-so said, this is, and then did you see, and he's just like, I'm going to go to sleep.
And that's it. And I think we need that. We need to slow down and process it because otherwise you've got all these conversations buzzing around in your head and you might be really high off the social interaction. But
completely,
that's not really sustainable either. I love that way of phrasing it because I think so often, particularly the kind of celebrity-driven culture we can slip into and, you know, the social media world, there can be this favoritism that being an extrovert is better. But I don't think there is a better or worse. I think it's just whichever one you are, be that one. You know, the one that you're not, that's the only bad one for you.
Yeah, and that's actually something that I embrace throughout my dating philosophy is I say pick a lane. Like, just be who you are. So many times I'll read a dating profile and it's like, I'm just as comfortable in a pair of sweats as I am in a pair of heels. Girl, no, you're not. Like, which one? Which one is? Just say, like, I know I'm much more comfortable, maybe not in a pair of heels, but I'm much more comfortable out of the house. Like, it's been a really interesting experience for me being locked in, being locked in with my kids and my husband, because so much of my energy is fueled by that human interaction. And I've managed to get that need met still because I have been busier than ever in quarantine doing podcasts and Zoom meetings and all of that. And I really have made an effort not only to continue to see my friends in a safe environment, outdoors, masked, but that has still been a priority for me. But then I've also found really fun things to do in quarantine. Like, you know, I bought tickets for all of us to do drag queen bingo at home. It was just as fun as the real in-person thing. I've done classes with teachers that I couldn't even get access to unless I traveled and spent thousands of dollars to sit with them. I can do that on Zoom. I got my husband tickets to see his favorite author in a talkback. And otherwise, that would have only taken place in the one city where he was at. So I think it's so much about, yes, it requires more effort sometimes, but it's so much about creativity in how to get your needs met. And the reality is we, unfortunately, are still going to be in this hybrid pandemic reality for quite a bit longer. And it took me a while to embrace that. Like, I really thought, like, 6 weeks and we'll be out of this. We're not. But if we just accept, like, this is what the reality is going to be. Now, how do I adapt and be myself and get my needs met within it? It's a lot easier than just sitting around waiting for things to change.
Yes. And also, I think we learn a lot through that process as well, spending more time with ourselves, having our options limited. And you reminded me of one of those things earlier when you were talking about the kind of decision paralysis we can get with dating apps, where it seems like there's so many options. You can fall into the trap of, oh, well, I'll wait for a few more matches to come through because maybe that'll solve it. But that just gives you more options.
Yeah, I do think a lot of times, yeah, we do get stuck in that decision paralysis and also that quest for perfection. I'm going to be spending a lot of 2021 researching this. I'm actually writing a book on that topic of how we're looking for someone to check all of our boxes. And this is such a different way of dating than even a generation or two ago. You look back at three generations ago, most people met and married someone who literally lived within five blocks of their home. So it was whoever was in your natural orbit that was who went to your church, who your mom knew, who you went to school with. That was your dating pool. And it was like, is it this or is it that? Make a choice. It's that or you're a spinster. And with dating apps, I think it's wonderful. Like, we are definitely seeing that relationships that begin on dating apps are, for the most part, it's only been around for a little while, but they are lasting longer and people report higher levels of happiness because they are getting more of their needs met. But there's a line between getting more of your needs met and trying to check every box. And I don't believe that your partner should be everything. Like, people are like, I want to do the same activities that they do, and they have to match me intellectually, and they have to make this much money, and they have to be this height and this weight and this hair color and this eye color, and they have to live within 5 miles of me. And like, the list just has gotten ridiculous. And I feel like sometimes that list or that reliance on the list and the quest for the perfect partner keeps a lot of people from being satisfied with the options available to us.
Yes, I can see that. And also, surely dating apps feed into that as well. Because if you constantly are seeing all these options and they're right in your phone, in your pocket, they're so accessible, it's very easy to buy into that idea that if I just swipe enough, that perfect person that hits everything on the list will be out there. But that's not how it works. And there's always, as well, things that aren't on your list. Even if they hit them all, there'll be something. There's no relationship where you don't have to work through any issues.
And would you even want that? I think that that's what the interesting part of relationships is, the discovery and the growth together, and without any kind of, you know, conflict or, you know, just any kind of dissonance, it robs you of the opportunity to have that growth. And that's what I love about being in a relationship and try to share with my clients, is that you should be in a relationship that makes you want to be the best version of yourself and provides an opportunity for you to, you know, hold that mirror up and look at the elements of yourself that you do want to change. And a lot of times people will say to me, well, I didn't feel the spark on the first date. I was looking for chemistry and I couldn't really tell. And I'll always encourage people to go, if you're not sure, go on the next date. It's an hour. It's an hour of connecting with another human. And sometimes things unfold that you didn't realize were there. But when you're chasing that spark, what you're chasing is familiarity. Either there's something about that person that reminds you of someone you dated, or there is an energy that something that didn't work out in the past, because if it had worked out in the past, you would still be in it. But you're kind of chasing that feeling in date one. Those are not the building blocks necessarily of a successful long-term relationship. So I really encourage people to practice slow love or slow dating and space out their interactions in time. See what happens in between the dates. That's what's really interesting in the early phase. Are you thinking about them? Are you wondering what it would be like to see them again? Are you thinking about something that they said and that makes you put a different lens on everything else that you're going through? And you can't do that if you are seeing someone six times in a row in a week, or if you are only chasing chemistry and you let them go after the first date.
Yes, I think that's massive. And, you know, I can't help but think of examples of like what the opposite would be, right? So some warning signs could be maybe if you're thinking about not them and what makes them great, but oh, they could fill this gap in my life.
True.
You know, allowing yourself that time for reflection.
Absolutely.
And yeah, and I also like the bit you said about sometimes familiarity can be sort of reassuring, but that's not necessarily a good thing. And I can hold my hands up to that one as someone who, even since starting this show, has noticed a lot of patterns in my dating history that aren't necessarily productive. And so just because I could be on a date with someone and it feels sort of familiar and I'm like, oh, I know what it's like to deal with someone like you, that's not necessarily me progressing in the dating world.
Yes. I just, on Dates and Mates, this last episode, I talked about being aware of your dating patterns. And somebody, like, anytime somebody is like, why do I always attract this? Or like, all of the men here are this. Then I say, let's take a step back and look at the through line. Look for those patterns because there's learning in them. I mean, I'm a dating nerd. Like, I like studying this stuff. I love studying human behavior. I know that's not necessarily natural for everyone, but I feel like you have an opportunity. Like, if you're listening to this podcast, you're curious to understand the why and the how. So why not? Why not dive in and let that be a pathway to understand yourself and your own patterns and your own thought processes better? Because the only way you can change it is first by understanding it. And the only way you can understand it is by recognizing it first. So if you recognize the pattern, let this be an invitation to dive a little bit deeper and explore why.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I love that way of looking at it. Definitely. More points for you. And also, the way you phrased it really makes me think about how empowering that experience can be, right? So taking the focus from, rather than why do I keep attracting people with this trait, for example, that's clearly not working out in terms of me getting a relationship I want. Instead, could we look at it as, why do I keep accepting interest from people with this trait? So let's say people that aren't ready for a relationship, why do I keep letting them in as opposed to why are they interested? You know, I think there can be a lot of empowerment in taking that ownership.
That's a really interesting way of looking at it. You know, just even going back to my own dating experience and Operation Date Nice Guys, like if I were to revise it now, I think nice is not a great adjective. And I really had to unpack what that meant to me. So with my clients, I have people really get clear on like your must-have qualities. And these are usually value-based, not just like they like to play tennis because I like tennis, but it's like, what do they believe about the world? What do they want for the future? Those are the kind of qualities that should be filters. And then I also give them one deal breaker. So that's like, I don't smoke and they smoke, or something that is unchangeable about either who they are or their behaviors. And when you have that kind of clarity, you really date differently. When I was doing Operation Date Nice Guys, it was really clear to me who did not hit that bar. And I had no problem being like, thank you, next. Thank you, next. If it's not the right person, I'd rather be alone than be unhappy in a relationship. But I know that's hard for a lot of people to come to that point and to feel like if I express a certain need or if I let someone know that their behavior doesn't match up with what my expectations are, they might reject me or I might push something away. And what if they were the one? But they're not the one if you have absolute clarity and are going based on that filter.
Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of the pressure that can be about dating and that everyone should couple off can really feed into that, where then you might do something that's actually very healthy, like put in a clear boundary around something that's important to you, or maybe they've upset you in a way and you need to kind of set a precedent that you can't treat me like that. And if the relationship therefore ends, that relationship wasn't for you, but plenty of naysayers outside of it might be like, oh, you were too fussy, or you're too picky, or, you know, they seem nice to me. You know, someone that wasn't in the relationship is like, oh, but I thought they were nice.
Right. Yeah, and we can't, if we lived our love lives based on other people's expectations, a lot more people would be single. So you have to really get in tune with your own needs and your own gut too. That's another thing I'm trying to infuse into my programs is use of intuition. Your body knows, your body will tell you if this person is right or not. Your mind will talk you out of it. So many times somebody will tell me what their must-haves and their deal breakers are. And I'm like, okay, great. And then they go on a date and they're like, well, I don't know. I don't know is the moment where you go back to that work you've done to get clarity beforehand. And they'll say, I don't know if they're a fit. I mean, he seemed really great. I really want kids, but he said he doesn't want kids, but he's so great. Why are you compromising already? You're just starting a relationship. And sure, you could get into a relationship that can grow with this person, but eventually you're going to get to that decision point. Do you want to invest a year or 2 years and then get to that place and then wonder why you wasted all that time and be more frustrated with the time that you wasted? Or would it be better to either spend that time working on yourself or working on meeting someone with whom you're more aligned?
For sure. And I think that you're doing a funny head bob at me.
I'm like, which one do you want?
No, it's true, but it's so common that people do that. And, you know, that's the line, isn't it, between pedestalizing someone, you know, dating the idea of a person, dating who they actually are. Because certainly with myself and people that I know, so often the issue that ends up breaking people up is something that was present very early on, that was there from the start. And maybe they didn't question it because they thought, you know, they want to get in the relationship anyway. You know, they're like, this is clearly an issue, but I don't want to rock the boat, or I want to see how it turns out. And I don't know how often that in itself fixes it in a way that tackling it head on would either fix it, or you realize, no, they're definitely, you gave the example of having kids. No, they really, really don't want to have kids. And that's a deal breaker for me. And therefore, there isn't a long term future for this.
Right. And they think, oh, well, they'll change their mind. And most people, like there's that Maya Angelou quote, when somebody shows you who they are the first time, believe them. And I really, really live by that in so many ways. There's something you said also that was really profound about this cultural drive to couple off. And that's something that even as a love coach, I'm really bullish on eliminating this single shame, the stigma around singlehood. I think there are different seasons in your life. and you could be in a season of singlehood. Like, I did so much really valuable self-work when I was single and experienced so many things that maybe I wouldn't have if I was in a relationship and didn't have that sort of flexibility or freedom. And some people have no desire to be in a monogamous relationship or a long-term relationship, or feel that they have no desire in this moment, but it could change down the road. And I think that's all okay. And one thing that I love about current dating culture is that we have so much choice. And I think it's really easy to get caught up in the downsides of dating culture today and forget that we have this privilege of choice. Even, you know, when we think back to those previous generations I was speaking about and how you met and married whoever was in your orbit, nobody was asking you about your gender identity. Nobody was asking you about whether you wanted a monogamy or non-monogamy. Nobody was asking you whether you even liked that person. It was just like, they're single, you're single. Can you tolerate them for, I don't know, 50, 60 years? We have choice now. We have choice. That's a wonderful thing. And to me, that is a much better situation, especially for women, I think, because we really didn't have any choice before. We now can choose the partner that's ultimately best for us, or we can choose not to partner. And I think it's important that we celebrate that choice a little bit more. And, you know, different generations are going to say what they're going to say, and they're going to try to impose certain pressures of people to live the way that they have lived. Just like I'm sure I'm going to put pressure on my children to live the lifestyle that I believe that they should have. But I hope I have raised them with enough confidence to tell me to, you know, mind my own business and to pursue the life that they ultimately think will make them happiest.
Yes. And I think not for nothing as well, it also helps that science has advanced so much, that women are able to have children later in life, you know, or more easily later in life, perhaps, because I think that's quite significant in this as well, that even just two generations ago, that pressure can come from the perspective of, oh, well, if you hit 30, things are going to get really impossible for you. And that isn't the case anymore.
Oh, well, yeah, that's, you're sort of opening a whole Pandora's box about, you know, the role of women in society and how that has shifted. But it is both being able to have children later in life. It is also to choose to not have children. So before, your goal in life is get married, have a kid, or what is your point? You're not a productive member of society. And now it's like you can choose not to have children. You can choose to have children on your own. And it's really shifted the dating dynamic in heterosexual relationships, because women are also earning more at work. So we don't need a man's money. We don't need a man's sperm. So we can be in relationship if we absolutely want to. And I think there are some men that are challenged by that and feel threatened by it. But others who, it's like, look, if she still wants to be with you in spite of all that, that means she really wants to be with you. And I would feel very seen and heard. But, you know, it's just, you're right. Science has just changed everything. And also for gay couples to be able to build a family and have society view a same-sex partnership in the same way that they would view a heterosexual partnership. I'm just so glad to be alive right now. And I think hopefully if things continue and we continue to evolve as humans, things will only get better.
Yes, it probably is a whole other Pandora's box. In the same way, when you mentioned about single shame, you know, that's something that I've talked a lot about with some recent guests. And, you know, even just the other day, I was thinking about how it's almost like the word single could be interchanged with alone in terms of how people view it. And I may be single, but I certainly don't feel alone. I have loads of friends, you know, great family, a cat that I adore, great flatmate. You know, I have so many connections, and the pandemic is kind of reminding me of that. I have a lot of people that I can call, you know, so it's not like I have an empty life. But sometimes you can be made to feel like that when, in fact, like you say, we are in a time where potentially we have more options. And so why not take our time with a little bit more? Why not try dating in the real world and also take a look at the apps? These options are out there. We might as well make the most of them. And when this episode will go out, actually, it's going to be the same week as things open up a little bit more in the UK. The next phase is people will be able to go and have a meal indoors again. Currently, you can just catch up outdoors. And also, we'll be able to go for overnight stays at people's houses. I noticed that in the rules. Right. So what kind of things do you think might change in dating? In the, I'm going to call it the after times. It might be slightly too soon to say that, but I've been calling pre-pandemic the before times, and we seem to be getting closer to the after times now.
Gosh, I don't know if there is an after times. I think we're just in, like, people are like, it's the new normal. And I'm like, let's stop saying that. It's just the normal, okay? I think it's going to be an evolution. I do think we're going to have a very hot summer. Okay, so OkCupid actually predicts that August 1st is going to be the hottest dating day of the year in the UK, as that is when most people will have access to vaccines and will have gotten at least one shot and will feel a little bit more comfortable. And I just actually today is my official fully vaccinated day. It's been 2 weeks since my second shot. And it's really weird walking in the world after you've been walking with blinders on for so long. Like, don't talk to me. You might have COVID. I can't engage with you. I can't be indoors with you. I'm double masking. And to be able to take those blinders off, there's a weird adjustment period that you go through where you're literally like, is this okay? Can we do this? And I think we're going to be in that a little bit for the early part of the summer, as you don't know. Like, it's someone's word. Are you vaccinated? Yeah, I'm vaccinated. Like, I don't think people are going to be asking to see your vaccination records when they're dating. So it's a little bit of a leap of faith in this early part, and we don't know for sure. So we're in just this completely uncharted territory. But I think people have been so, you know, pent up sexually, have experienced skin hunger, as they say, and that desire for human touch, even though many people have built very full lives, as you and I have, in the virtual space, there still isn't a substitute for actual human interaction. And there will come a time where we're going to need to bridge that. I actually did a show recently on Dates and Mates about the study that Cosmo magazine and Esquire magazine did with the Kinsey Institute. And they're predicting that based on current attitudes, people are going to be more relationship minded in the future. I think the effect of the pandemic is going to be very much longer than I think we're giving it credit for right now. And I think what they saw in their data is that people are really recognizing the role of partnership in their lives. But I don't think we're going to be running right out of the gate like pursuing that right away. I think that's an overall feeling that we're going to see a shadow of for many years to come.
Absolutely, yeah. And even listening to that episode and reading about other predictions, I would agree. You know, when the pandemic started and we had the first lockdown here in the UK, one of my first thoughts was, wow, people are going to be all over each other after this. You know, I thought it was going to be a step up in terms of like hookup prevalence, if that makes sense. And actually, I think something about maybe the time that this has gone on now and people having the chance to really unpick, okay, what am I actually missing? What am I really looking for? And listening to, what is it, another 52 episodes of your show, you know, they're learning a lot in that time. And I think I would agree. That's definitely how I'm feeling, that as much as I was looking to date and get into something more serious in 2020, you know, like many people, I was like, oh, this is going to be a good year for me. Nice round number. Instead, this additional time has made me approach it in a way that's not just like serious on theory, but I think I'll be more serious in practice as well.
That's interesting to hear. Because I read all the data on it, but it's interesting to hear from a personal perspective how it really has impacted your thinking. And I think we'll get there. I think we'll get back to hookup culture. Like Cosmo and Esquire and Kinsey Institute said, that hookup culture is dead. And I'm just like, it's not really dead. It's kind of in a coma right now, but it could wake up at any point. And it's just the pervasive fear of COVID. I feel that acutely. I don't know exactly how it feels in the UK, but I live in Los Angeles where we got hit pretty hard this winter. It's interesting because I spent the last weekend with my dad now that we're, you know, finally vaccinated. My dad lives in Michigan where it's just clear that they have a completely different way of living. And he didn't have the experience that I did. And coming together and seeing that difference in perspective and having to then live in a world where we're all going to have to come back together and realize the fear that I've been carrying for the last year is not the same as the fear that he's been carrying. And, you know, and we have all had really profound experiences. I mean, there's also people, you know, who've lost really important people in their lives. There are people who lost their job and their livelihood. There are people who were impacted, who had COVID and still feeling the effects of that. And that's something that I think, you know, a vaccine or a date on the calendar isn't going to necessarily be able to shift overnight. I think that it's going to really be a process of unpacking for a lot of different people in a lot of different ways.
For sure. And just desensitizing ourselves, I think, from being around people again, you know, going back to restaurants, doing these straightforward things and finding a way to feel comfortable again will take some time. And I actually have a personal theory about this, if you want to hear it. And I know you've talked about it on the show. A lot of people over the last year have been reaching out to exes. You know, maybe they're sort of thinking about their life, their history. They're maybe looking at themselves being single and tracking it back. And I also wonder if part of that is that there's a perceived safety in familiarity, right? That when we think about kind of safety out and about, there's this kind of prevalent fear of like strangers are going to get you, even though the stats are that, you know, a person most likely to harm you is actually the person you're living with, particularly if you're a woman. And so I wonder if we have this kind of like innate bias towards familiarity, that someone we know is safer and therefore they're safer maybe to get back with, or maybe to kind of duck around the rules with. And I'm thinking of some people in my life that have kind of gone that route. And I wonder if maybe that will be one of the lasting effects, that perhaps part of what will come back in hookup culture is that people might have more casual long-term relationships with people they know, or maybe go back to certain people as a way that feels safer whilst we're still dealing with the hangover of other people are scary and unsafe.
That's a fascinating theory. And I am excited to see how that plays out.
Right.
Yeah, I think you definitely are onto something. And it's interesting, you're talking about the person closest to you is usually the person most likely to harm you. It's true. You think about it in terms of COVID too. Most people caught COVID from someone in their household or from gathering with friends when they knew they shouldn't have been inside. And that was, from the stats I've read, much more of a culprit than like being out in the streets and catching it at the grocery store. We're so afraid to go to the grocery store. And it's like, how many people, honestly, like not people who worked at the grocery store, but how many people caught COVID from going and picking up some toilet paper if they could get it? Probably not nearly as many as caught it from someone in their household. So that said, I think it's a really interesting theory. And I do also feel like when you go through, really, we all experienced a collective trauma. And when you go through a collective trauma, and I don't have to tell you this because you do a mental health podcast, but there's something that bonds you to the people with whom you've experienced that trauma. And then also, you know, there's this process of unpacking it and not wanting to be re-traumatized. And maybe it's the familiar that we will gravitate towards because it's less likely to cause an adverse reaction. I'm not a big fan of getting back together with exes. I think it's the biggest waste of time, honestly.
Yeah.
I'm not a big fan of Friends with Benefits. I also think that's a waste of time. But, you know, I could see the appeal. I could see the appeal right now. And actually, Match put out their Singles in America study, which they do every year in August. And they found that a quarter of people had hooked up with their platonic roommate or flatmate, as you would say.
Oh, wow.
That blew my mind. That blew my mind. That's real short-term thinking, if you ask me.
Mm. Yeah, and I'm feeling called out because I would fit within that statistic. So, yeah. I guess it sort of depends what you're looking for, right? If we go back to what you said about, you know, the friends with benefits situation, I'm someone that's been in a lot of those through my life, but I'm not having those as a substitute for like a fully committed romantic relationship, if I could describe it that way, right? So I am in it more so as a, this is someone that I'm really close with and a good friend, and this is like an additional part of that friendship, as opposed to something comparable with a romantic relationship. And I don't know, maybe it's something as simple as me framing it in that way in my mind is part of why I can make it work, because that's where I'm setting the expectation that I'm focusing on the friendship. And then this is a plus, as opposed to comparing it to romantic relationships and being like, this is actually really different. And how do I feel about that?
I just see that a lot of times, not everyone comes in with that level of clarity and maturity about it. And that sometimes it's real easy to catch feelings, and then one person has a different feeling about it, and then you've now lost both your FWB and your friend. And I'm curious, though, now, because I called you out, with the platonic, yeah, the platonic roommate situation, I feel like, doesn't it complicate things, too, for your living situation?
All right. So, okay. Now I'm on trial. I'll answer both things in order. So the first thing, you are right in terms of what you've described as the friends with benefits. I tend to use the term intimate friends. Off the top of my head, every time one of those has ended, it has been that romantic feelings have got involved, or that it's clear that the expectation is different between us. So I can confirm that on why they ended. But I guess, for me personally, that doesn't rule it out being like, oh, but it can be a good period of time and that can still be someone that I'm close with today. But yeah, I get what you mean. It's not for everyone. And I think you have to go in with a clear idea of what you're looking for. I certainly, one thing I would never recommend is using that as a route to get into a romantic relationship with someone. If you get the impression that they're looking for something physical and nothing more, again, it comes back to what we said of, take them as they are. Don't decide that you are going to change who this person is. For context, my flatmate and I used to be in a relationship and we're still very close. And so a lot of that closeness has stayed in a variety of ways, is the best way I guess I could phrase it. And so perhaps because I've had experience of intimate friendships and also our communication is pretty good, it works for us.
I love hearing that. And I do appreciate alternate perspectives too, you know, because I'm speaking from the point of view of most people come to me for help moving into a serious long-term relationship. So those are like some of the common speed bumps. I don't know what you would call them in the UK.
Speed bumps. Yeah, I think so.
Okay. So those are some of the common speed bumps that people would run into in being able to move into that relationship. And whether it's just being sexually involved with someone and getting that need met, dissipating your drive to find that other relationship, or starting to catch feelings about that person and wanting to change them. Sometimes I can see it, I see it as an impediment to finding that successful relationship, but I'm so open that there are, like, I can talk in terms of general experiences and statistics and society and culture as a whole. But the thing that I would love to leave everybody with is that you have your own experiences, you have free will and free choice. And your experience is like, yeah, you could be the outlier. You could be that experience that doesn't necessarily line up with what other people are experiencing. So that's where it comes back to like trusting your gut, and you know ultimately what is right for you and your partner or partners.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, I agree. And as boring as sometimes this kind of advice can be, a lot of it does come down to expectations and communication, you know, the stuff that you hear all the time. And so I guess for this situation, one of the things that makes it make sense is we know that, like, that's not a forever thing. The priority is the friendship, and things will change. So yeah, there you go.
Clarity is everything.
There's your perspective. And so to start wrapping up then, we are going to each choose a rule of the game. So have you got something you try and live by in relationships? You've said so many great things. Can you think of another? Or have you already given all the best ones away?
Oh my gosh, I've given so much, but there's always more. One rule of the game that I want to remind everybody of is that rejection is your protection. And I find that we get caught up sometimes in the outcome of a particular relationship or a date. And we're so afraid of that rejection that it keeps us from really living in our truth. But I just want to remind everyone, if you feel rejected or if a situation is rejected, first of all, it's not a rejection necessarily of you, but it's a rejection of what you are bringing to the table for that person at that time. And so you may be being protected from something else. You're either spared or you're prepared. So you're spared a lot of drama or you're prepared for something greater. And if you can hold on to that, that will lead you to your truth in relationships.
Yes, very much agree with that. And all I would add is, you know, I've really tried to practice assessing the reaction beyond just the initial, like, oh, rejection, right? Because if you actually take a closer look at it, oftentimes you think, it's actually okay. It's actually someone I'm very cool about being rejected by. Maybe I was unsure and now I look at it again and I'm like, no, I probably would have come to the same decision. They've just beaten me to it.
And you got to get that ego out of the way.
Yeah. And also, you know, particularly within dating, you know, that rejection could come on a dating app. That rejection could come just after a first date. That person doesn't know you yet at all. They're just as much rejecting the idea of you or their biases, whether or not the lighting was weird in the date, like, or they enjoyed their food. Like, there could be a million other things that are going on there, but we can, yeah, assume that it's all our fault. And I'd say it's almost always not all our fault.
Completely.
And then my rule of the game is one I've been thinking about throughout this conversation, actually, that as much as it's exciting that we're getting closer to that date you gave, the 1st of August, some kind of more normal dating world, that shouldn't be a reason to bring all the expectations back in. All the pressures we've talked about dating, about coupling off, you know, the idea of cuffing season, which will be on us before we know it by the time we get to August. You know, just because we can go out and date doesn't mean we're failing if we're not, or if we're taking it slowly. So
important.
Yeah.
You know, they say expectations are resentments waiting to happen. So no expectations summer. I'm here for it.
All right. So that's it. Thank you so much for joining me. And where else would you like people to check you out?
You can check me out at datesandmates.com and also on all the socials at Damona Hoffman. And I love answering questions. I also write for the LA Times. I have an advice column in the LA Times, Dear Damona. And so if you have a question that you'd love for me to answer either on the show or in my column, please send it my way.
And I'm also going to add to that, actually, my favorite article from Dear Damona, where you talked about racism in dating. It's, of course, such a sensitive topic, and there can be such pressure to get it perfect when talking about a topic like that. And I think you've got it as near to perfect as I've ever seen. So people should definitely read that article.
Thank you. I mean, the bar is high now, Bobby. But but yeah, I'm just interested in that conversation and getting people to really examine their beliefs and how they act upon them and make sure that they're really in alignment with what they think and believe and the way they move through the world.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a good way of putting it, because you can accidentally be straying from your values and not even realizing it. And so that's why we have wonderful people out there like you to remind us of just things to think about. So yeah, thank you again.
Thank you, Bobby.
Thank you for listening. For more content, including extended ad-free episodes, you can join our Patreon, linked in the episode description. Our show is edited and produced by Pete Murtagh, with music by the brilliant Tessa Violet. Speak to you next Friday.